I, as a matter of fact, worked in a facility that had assisted living and skilled nursing, and the chairman of the board was the neurosurgeon who was on the hospital in the town over. And he was a wonderful gentleman, unbelievably smart, but knew nothing about senior housing. And then we had the farmer that was sitting next to him, who was actually an ex-banker, and he was my go-to person on the board. He would show up. He said, you know, he'd always walk in late. Sorry, I had an issue with one of the cows, you know. But these are the people that are running these facilities. You can't blame them. They're not the ones that understand senior living. They're making the final decisions as board members. So the one thing I would say is make sure they have D&O insurance.
Yeah. And so I think to put a finer point on it, there's the saying of no good deed goes unpunished. And it seems like these are probably community members who are upstanding, that are chosen due to their position and just hard work and their reputation to serve on these boards, yet they can get themselves in trouble.
Exactly.
And so I think if somebody has a potential client and it happens to be a rural facility like this, you'll definitely want to make sure that they do have, or you subsequently acquire before filing, a decent D&O policy.
Absolutely. And have somebody in there, really, between the board and the facility, usually a manager, and a lot of not-for-profits don't necessarily see that that's necessary, but having a professional manager in there, which is the liaison between the board and the facility, really, from a legal perspective as well as just an operational and resourceful perspective, makes more sense.
One thing I've seen is that they don't realize they're in trouble until it's too late, and that goes back to your point about them not being really skilled in healthcare operations or just making decisions in that context.
Absolutely.
Well, moving on to our next slide, and what has been a reoccurring theme for the last few years, rural hospitals continue to experience distress. This is due to a number of reasons, but two factors immediately stand out. That is declining Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements, and also the fact that these hospitals continuously struggle with providing ER services to uninsured patients. I think the board issue equally applies to these hospitals as well.
Absolutely, especially in the rural area. And you know, I don't know, many of you may not know this, but healthcare is senior housing is the second most regulated industry next to nuclear power. The laws, there's federal, there's state, there's county, there's every kind of law that you can imagine. And I appreciate not being attorney, but understanding what the attorneys go through. But senior housing and healthcare is highly regulated.
Moving on to our next slide. There is big money in healthcare, and there is also big debt. The sector is huge. Industry annual revenue is over $1.6 trillion. The U.S. spends more on healthcare per capita, $8,608 per capita, and more on healthcare as a percentage of GDP, 19%, than any other nation. Conversely, there is big debt in the healthcare sector. In the first half of the year, the sector accumulated almost $5 billion in aggregate Chapter 11 debt. By comparison, in 2016 and 2017 combined, the sector's aggregate Chapter 11 liabilities totaled less than $5 billion. So you see the trend there. So now that we have touched on the landscape of some of the sector's filings, Susie's going to walk us through some of the stressors that have led to these filings.
Yeah. And so many of you may know or heard of, many of these stressors. They may be self-evident, but also just to put it in perspective, you know, our demographics are changing. And the baby boomers are, you know, very much in line and ready for these types of services. And they've disrupted the silent population, who many of you are, your parents are mostly the silent population. The baby boomers want to have the Wi-Fi, obviously not as much so as the millennials and the Generation Z and all the Gen Xers that are coming up. But healthcare is changing a lot. A lot of the buildings are old. The reimbursement issues are you know, in the last few years, you've seen the uncertainty about the Affordable Care Act. How do we know if we're in or if we're out, if we're up or down? We never know what's happening. And that's really a huge uncertainty. But then the only thing constant is change. And I try to tell that to everyone whenever we take over a facility so that people understand that just doing the same thing over again doesn't mean that that's the right way to do it. So looking at the most prevalent funding is Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare is like an insurance type of funding, and yes, everyone is eligible for Medicare, however, once they reach 65, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get reimbursement in a facility from Medicare. Medicare, you have to be medically eligible to receive reimbursement from a Part A from Medicare. Medicaid, thereby, is a federal program, and it is run by each state. Medicare is federal, so it is overseen the same way in every single state. And obviously, the government is constantly changing how facilities are getting reimbursed. And
so, Susie, on that, I do just kind of want to touch on a point. So when professionals are looking at these cases beforehand, you know, before any filing comes down the pipeline or maybe receivership, which I know you're going to get to,